First, it's time for our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. Today, Democrats blocked a Republican police reform bill from moving forward to a debate in the U.S. Senate. President Trump has resumed large-scale in-person campaign events in Tulsa and Phoenix and will be here in Wisconsin tomorrow. And top infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci testified before Congress about coronavirus.
I, as a member of the task force and my colleagues on the task force, to my knowledge, I know for sure, but to my knowledge, none of us have ever been told to slow down on testing. That just is a fact.
We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Our question for you this week about police reform in Congress. It hit a stumbling block today, at least both chambers talking about the issue, but it's not clear what's going to come out of it. What do you want to see come out of it? Do you want specific guidelines when it comes to things like chokeholds or bans on chokeholds? Or do you want to do what some Senate Republicans have wanted to see in offering incentives for police departments to change their behavior on that and other issues? How about things like qualified immunity for police officers? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jennifer Habercorn is with us. She covers Congress for the LA Times. Jennifer, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
Well, let's start with President Trump. He had one of his large-scale in-person rallies, first in quite a while, in Tulsa. Several months he was barred from doing so, in effect, by the coronavirus and social distancing. Talk about the significance of President Trump trying to get back out in front of the public again.
Well, we all know that this president really enjoys those kind of rallies and having that big crowd around him. And he, you know, he can stand up at that podium for seemingly a very long time because he seems to really enjoy that. And he and his allies in the White House felt like it was really important for him to get back out there. And so he did and went to Tulsa. And like you mentioned at the top, he's heading to Wisconsin soon. Obviously, we have to contrast that with Tony Fauci's comments yesterday that, you know, in several states, the virus is surging, and you can't ignore the fact that the campaign is drawing thousands of people into a confined space, oftentimes without masks, as this pandemic continues to circulate. And I think the issue the Trump campaign is going to confront is exactly that the threat of circulating this virus is going to get extremely serious. And when you get closer to the November election, you could even have the common flu season interacting with coronavirus, which has, you know, a severe potential to be really disastrous. You know, those are all things that the administration is, I should say, that the campaign side is going to have to deal with.
Staying with COVID-19 and Dr. Fauci's testimony, there's been some back and forth. President Trump saying, in effect, we're doing too much testing, and that's inflating our COVID-19 numbers and suggesting that testing needs to go down. Dr. Fauci, as we heard in that clip a few moments ago, saying, no, nobody's telling us to stop testing. And then we're hearing from the White House, it sounds like they're looking to cut funding for testing that's being done at the state and local level. Can you sort out for us what we know about the federal commitment to COVID-19 testing?
Well, I wish I could sort it out, frankly, because it is very confusing. We're getting a lot of mixed messages on testing. The health experts say that testing is, you know, one of the most important parts of this reopening process because we need to know who has the virus and who doesn't. And so when you hear the president say things like reducing testing, and then he said that it was a joke, and then the administration said, no, it's not a joke, it is very hard to get a handle on what the administration's strategy is. But that said, Tony Fauci said in congressional testimony yesterday that testing is still continuing and that he and his allies on the coronavirus task force have not been told to reduce the amount of testing. So I think for now, that seems to be the case. But, you know, I'll be honest, it is a little murky when you hear such mixed messages.
Talking to Jennifer Habercorn for the LA Times. We are looking at some of the big national news in politics. Getting back to the rallies, I want to give a listen to President Trump and hear some of his message. This is the event with an appearance in Phoenix yesterday for student supporters. Here's a listen.
But the radical left, they hate our history, they hate our values, and they hate everything we prize as Americans, and we're right. Because our country didn't grow great with them. It grew great with you and your thought process and your ideology.
Can you talk about the message we've heard from President, both in Tulsa and Phoenix? This is obviously a kickoff, a resumption of his campaign. What kind of things is he focusing on?
You know, some of the things, like you mentioned in the clip, there's obviously a big focus right now on these Confederate statues that Black Lives Matters protesters have taken down in some parts of the country. That seems like it's really going to be a dividing point as the campaign rolls ahead. The president specifically there was talking about our history, and that has rankled some folks who say that that is, you know, really the history of the white Southern Confederacy and not the history of the entire United States. And I think that's going to be a real point of contention that the Joe Biden's campaign is going to try to contrast with the president as this campaign moves forward in coming months.
And before we move on from the rallies, there was a lot of attention to the relatively low turnout in Tulsa. The president and his campaign anticipating an overflow crowd and, you know, delivering a special speech outside to people who couldn't get in. How has that played out so far in how people are talking about the president's resumption of these rallies?
Well, we heard the campaign ahead of time say that they had a million people try to get ticket information for the event. And then when the event happened, the rally was not full. It was only about two-thirds full. And there was some talk that there were some teens on TikTok who were sending in fake ticket requests to kind of fill up the tickets and make sure that the president's supporters could not get in. It was a little unclear whether that actually was the reason that the stadium wasn't full. But, you know, this idea of the number of people has been something that the president has made important since literally day one of his presidency. If you remember at his inauguration, one of the first disputes between journalists and this White House was how many people were at the inauguration. So clearly this kind of confrontation over numbers and whether the stadium is full is a running theme.
Let's turn to yesterday's primary elections. New York and Kentucky got a lot of focus, some other states as well. One of the biggest stories that we know right now is how much we don't know. It looks like elections are going to take longer to get counted these days, in part because of mail-in voting. Do we need, you think, Jennifer, to adjust our expectations of election night results?
Yes, definitely. I don't think we can count on knowing who the president is going to be the night of an election anymore. You know, I remember actually in Wisconsin being at the Marquette student paper the night of the 2004 election, and we were trying to figure out if we were going to know who was going to be the president by the time the paper was published, and we didn't. And so I think it could be several days. I mean, we're now seeing in New York, there were primaries last night that we still don't know the answers to. We do seem to have some good idea of which way things are going, but when you're looking at a presidential election, it could be too close to know.
What were you watching as a congressional reporter? What elections have you been watching most closely?
Well, last night I was watching a race in New York between Elliot Engel, the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, who is facing an upstart progressive challenger. And that challenger, the race has not been called, but almost certainly is going to defeat Elliot Engel. And there were two other retiring members where there were open primaries, and the progressive candidates did well there. And it was really seemingly a good night for progressive Democrats. You know, they saw 2 years ago when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez defeated an incumbent Democrat, and you know, her New York neighbors were hoping to do the same, and it looks like that's the case. I think in the coming primaries, we're going to see, you know, Democrats are kind of in a period right now where they're trying to figure out where they want to go. You know, progressives are very active. They've done very well in some races. They have not done well everywhere, but there's a lot of progressives who feel like the energy is on their side right now. And they're hoping for more victories in some of these House races.
We're talking to LA Times congressional reporter Jennifer Habercorn about some of the week's top stories in national politics. Coming up, we'll look at Congress, the big story there, one of the big stories, efforts to pass police reform legislation, stalling there. And we want to hear what you think about that at 800-642-1234. What changes, if any, do you want to see come from Congress when it comes to the way police operate in the United States? Or do you think it shouldn't be up to Congress? It should be at the state and local level. Are there specific changes you'd like to see them tackle? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Jennifer Habercorn from the LA Times, congressional reporter based in Washington. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's turn now to Congress, Jennifer, and police reform bills. First of all, it seems like some of the latest news in the U.S. Senate. What's going on there?
Senate voted this morning. Republicans there had put forward a bill and were hoping to move it forward, but Democrats voted no. They did block the bill from moving forward. They said that the bill is severely flawed and not even a suitable place to start negotiating at. Republicans were hoping they could at least start the process of legislating on this bill. They were trying to convince Democrats to let the process move forward, and they were not able to do that.
What do we see? What are some of the highlights of what the Republicans have at least taken as their starting position in the Senate?
So Republicans, one of the points of difference is how to deal with chokeholds. Democrats would ban it, at least among federal officers. They can't control directly what local police departments do, but they want to ban it at the federal level. Whereas Republicans want to disincentivize it. They want to essentially give police departments financial incentive to do it themselves. A big point of contention is qualified immunity, whether you can sue a police officer. Democrats want to give people a lot more leverage to do so, and Republicans, for the most part, do not want to do so. There are some similarities. They both want to make lynching a federal hate crime. There's a lot of agreement on that. This is really an issue where, you know, obviously we're in this moment right now where a lot of folks feel like the public wants action. The public would support moving forward on legislation. But we're seeing, you know, this kind of same old Republicans and Democrats not getting along. You have this Republican bill, and then you have a Democratic bill in the House that's scheduled to get a vote tomorrow. That is likely to pass the Democratic House and then die in the Republican Senate. And there is hope among some of the top lawmakers working on this issue that they can come together afterward and perhaps begin some new negotiations. Whether that's actually going to happen is a little too premature at this point to say.
Sure. We don't know what's going to happen, but what would afterward mean? I've seen some people say with what's happened in the Senate today, afterward could mean, you know, after the elections in November.
Mm-hmm. It could very well be then. You know, I will say I've watched a lot of these debates where you kind of have the House doing one thing and the Senate doing another, and they don't even really negotiate at all. This feels a little bit different because you do have nearly every lawmaker saying that policing reforms need to happen. And you are seeing a little bit of, I don't even want to say negotiation, but signs that they're people want to move the process forward. House Speaker Pelosi was kind of urging Senate Democrats to at least start the process so that they could, you know, move toward a Democratic bill in the House. And you saw Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, obviously the top Republican in the Senate, today say that he's willing to bring the bill up again. So, you know, when we're there's a lot of congressional minutiae here, but when you see such stalemate all the time, this does seem like an area where we're seeing a little incremental possibility here of a real chance of moving something.
Talking to Jennifer Habercorn from the LA Times. This is our weekly look at some of the latest news in national politics. Let's bring on a caller now, harkening back to the president's rallies. Jim is with us in Rice Lake. Jim, hi.
Hi, thank you for having me on. I'm not going to talk about the police issue, although it's extremely relevant. What I found really disturbing was Trump in the Oklahoma rally was talking about our beautiful heritage, and those were protesting to bring down the Robert E. Lee and statute in Virginia, and the Stonewall Jackson statute in Washington, D.C., which Jackson has no association with. Well, I grew up in Boston. We have statues there. We have a monument to Colonel Shaw, who commanded the 54th Massachusetts, the first African-American combat regiment in the Civil War, and also a statue to George Tecumseh Sherman, who actually is from Ohio, because we celebrated the liberation of Georgia. So I think Mr. Trump has a different concept of heritage than from some of us who really don't celebrate slavery, the Confederacy, or white supremacy. I'd be interested in your guest comments. Thank you.
Jim, thanks for the call. And I'll throw in there, Jennifer, something happening in the halls of Congress. Talk about some of the statues and memorials actually in the halls of Congress.
You're right. You know, I'll just say that the caller is really getting at what I think is going to be a big flashpoint in the coming weeks is these statues and whether they are, you know, like your caller said, just, you know, rewarding the Confederacy and slavery or, you know, as the president says, this is our, you know, quote unquote, our heritage. And we are seeing that debate take place in Congress. In the Capitol building, each state has two statues, and the state is allowed to decide who those statues are for. And there are several statues that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has identified as related to the Confederacy or slavery, and she wants those removed from the halls of Congress. There's some Republican lawmakers who say, you know, that's really just up to the states, and if the states are recognizing someone that they don't want to anymore, that they should decide to make that change themselves. It shouldn't be up to Congress to do that. That may be the case. Pelosi does have some authority here, and she perhaps jokingly, it was a little unclear, suggested that she could merely move the statues to a closet somewhere if they're recognizing someone that she doesn't want to have that kind of recognition in the halls of Congress.
Jim, thanks a lot for that call. Jennifer, I want to turn to a story you covered about a local political figure for you, a representative there who's being vetted apparently as a possible running mate for Joe Biden, not a household name around the country. Can you tell us about that story?
Sure. Congresswoman Karen Bass, she is actually leading the House effort on this policing bill that we've talked about. She's not a household name. She's well known in California. She represents Los Angeles in the House and was the Speaker of the California State Assembly during the recession and actually worked, despite being a Democrat, worked quite closely with Arnold Schwarzenegger, a Republican governor, to get the state through the 08 recession. She has gotten a lot of attention of late because of the policing bill, and just recently kind of got on former Vice President Joe Biden's shortlist for the vice presidency. The campaign is vetting several people. The vice president has said that he will name a woman as his vice president, and he is facing a lot of calls now to name a woman of color to that position. And one of the reasons Congresswoman Bass, who's African American, has you know, not only led the policing reform bill, but is now an additional name on that list.
In our last couple of minutes, Jennifer, I want to turn to possible future economic stimulus packages. The president had said something about maybe new payments going out to Americans, maybe soon. Is there any buzz or effort in Congress to do something like that right now?
Not a ton. Republicans in the Senate, you'll remember a couple months ago, shortly after the first CARES Act, the first major stimulus bill passed, Democrats immediately wanted to pass another one. Republicans said, no, it's way too soon. You know, they kind of had fatigue about spending all this money and felt like they needed to let the money that they had already approved into the economy and see the effect. So Republicans said that they would return to the issue in July. You know, at this point, it's a little too soon to know whether something will actually move, but Congress is definitely going to have to confront the issue probably next month. I think, you know, the safe bet is probably something will get approved, but how big it is, how expansive it is a little unclear to me at this point. You know, there's the $600 unemployment benefit that was added on in the CARES bill is set to expire the end of July. Democrats are calling for that to be renewed or perhaps even increased. Republicans have really drawn a line over that. They don't like the idea that people who are getting unemployment benefits are getting, in some cases, additional money to stay home versus going back to work. So we've seen some conflict over some parts of what could be an initial stimulus bill. And we'll just add that to the list of things Congress has to fight about over the next 6 weeks.
Lots to watch over that month and a half. Jennifer, thanks again for joining us today.
It was great to talk with you.
That's LA Times congressional reporter Jennifer Habercorn. She joins us today to talk about some of the top stories coming out of the nation's capital. Still time for you to share your thoughts on some of the issues we've talked about, including efforts at police reform and more. You can always share your thoughts and story suggestions with us at ideas@WPR.org. That's our email, ideas@WPR.org. Follow coverage over at the Ideas Network Facebook page and feel free to tweet us at Central Time WPR.